This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. And this is episode 327, that is. And goodness, Seth, this isn't just we're not just excited about the Cardinals looking good. They looked great. They beat the Rams, not just in a nail-biter that we thought the type of game was going to be. They controlled that game almost as well as they controlled Week 1. They defeat the Rams 37-20. They're 4-0, the only team in the NFL left unbeaten. First place in the NFC West. It's a good time to be a Cardinals fan right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just different than what we were expecting. I think I was one of the few people that saw them starting 3-0, but I don't think there were many people that saw them going 4-0, and I think there were really probably nobody that you would say is, you know, paying attention that would think that they would basically go into LA and look like the Super Bowl favorite team instead of the Rams. And, you know, that's not to say that they're the Super Bowl favorites or anything like that right now, but when we're just talking about a game, they looked like the more complete team. They looked like the better coach team and the more prepared team. And yeah, it's crazy to think that 4 weeks into a season when, you know, the initial questions began of, you know, is this team, you know, is Kingsbury coaching for his and Kime's job? And, you know, what do they have in these veterans and all of this stuff? And in the end, it's just, there's really no question. Like they are primed to have a big season, and they have the skills. I mean, obviously, this is every team in the NFL, but health permitting, they have the skills to be a player in the NFC.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to start talking about. We're going to talk about, well, how big that win was for the Cardinals, and if they're the best team in the NFL right now. We'll look at the win, the best parts of it. We'll talk about the run defense and pass rush, which we might look at as kind of a concern, and then we'll look ahead to the Week 5 matchup against the San Francisco Giants at home in Week 5. How big was that? I mean, to me, this win meant a lot. The more I listen to Cliff Kingsbury, the more he sounds like Bill Belichick, and they are really focusing on that one day, one-and-oh mentality where they don't look ahead, they don't think about what they've done. And I think they got – last year was a good example of that. Once they were 6-3, they started feeling themselves, and they got a little unfocused. They felt that they were going to make the playoffs, and then they didn't because things fell apart. This year, I think they've kind of fixed that focus of staying – you know, on track 1 week at a time. And, you know, I think for anything else, this win was huge for many reasons. One, it puts it, well, if they finally beat the Rams, which is, it's a signature statement. I know they don't talk about signature wins. This is a signature win for this team and for this regime, because the Rams had obliterated them essentially for the last 8 meetings. It gives them the early lead in the NFC West. It proves to the rest of the NFL that they weren't just a weak 3-0, that they were a legit 4-0 team. That win over Tennessee was impressive. Their win over Minnesota was suspect. Their win over Jacksonville was expected. But the win in Los Angeles proved, I think, it was the statement game that tells the rest of the league that the Cardinals are legitimately good this year. And are a team to be reckoned with moving forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at it, a lot of it was defined by the veterans. And you know, we as Arizona sports fans can parallel this a lot to the Phoenix Suns. And I know you've done so very eloquently in the past, but you've got guys on both sides of the ball now in J.J. Watt, Jordan Hicks, and then on offense, Rodney Hudson and A.J. Green, who know that this is their last ride, that they know that this is it for them. They're not going to get a next best chance to do this again. And so to your point of 1 week at a time, I think those guys added to, you know, obviously the young talent that they have, and then, you know, added to a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, who's already here. You're talking about a well put together and focused team. And that is, I think, a lot of what was missing. And I think it's helped Cliff probably become a little bit more of a hard ass in the same ways that he probably doesn't have to be the bad guy, because you've got Watt and Hudson on either side of the ball really dictating things. You know, we've discussed this before with Kyler Murray. Kyler's never going to be the Tom Brady type of guy. He's never going to be that get in your face and you know, berate you type of guy that's going to ask.
We are seeing more than, not necessarily he's not in your face, but he is much more vocal this year. He has taken control of the offense and communicates much better with receivers what he wants from them. Whether it was just a case of he finally found his footing in the league, he tasted some success. He finally feels that he's done enough to be able to call out other guys. He isn't quite that, but he is very much showing that he is of that same type of leader caliber.
Correct. But it's, I mean, and to your point, it's just a different leadership style. And that's okay. But when you have a guy like Rodney Hudson, and then you have a guy like J.J. Watt that demand, you know, respect, it is fun to watch this team, because, and obviously we'll find out soon, but they seem incredibly focused. They seem like the team that is more primed to make a push this year. It looked almost backwards than what we were expecting, right? Like, we weren't expecting the Cardinals defense to be the one to kind of, I don't want to say shut down, that's a little strong, but, you know, really outdo the Rams offense. And when it happened, it was just, it was unexpected, and it's nice to see it, quite frankly.
Well, and what the difference is the Cardinals took control early. This is similar in the fact that they did in Los Angeles what they did to Tennessee, only without the complete dominance. They held the ball. And I think what we're seeing here, Cliff Kingsbury really likes to defer the kick. He really likes deferring, because he would like to manage the game to get the ball back at the end of the half and get points, and then to get points in the first part of the second half, which is kind of the opposite of Bruce Arians most of the time, who was always receive.
Yeah. Let's open up the game and get things going. And Cliff looks at things and goes, you know, I want to score at the end of the half. And we've seen it in
they've been fantastic at the end of half this year so far. But what we're seeing is they forced a field goal. Then when they didn't score, they made something happen defensively. They got the interception. Then they got a touchdown. And so they put themselves ahead. So they were able to play from the head. And now, again, they let it looked like it was going to be a back-and-forth game, but then the defense stepped up. Instead of playing from behind is what they did a lot of the time in, against Minnesota, and they played a little bit behind against Jacksonville. They were able to play from ahead, and I think that is what really did made the difference for them. But going to the question of how important it is, and do you think right now we could consider the Cardinals the best team in the NFL?
You know, that's always a loaded question because teams have off days, and we know that the week to week in the NFL is just so difficult, and teams, the ebb and flow of the season, you know, creates such you know, dynamics in teams that you wonder about it. But when you look at what the Cardinals have done through four games, and that's, I think, what you have to qualify this as. Through four games, they've won with the best offense in the NFL.
They are number one in points and in total offense, so they are the best offense in the NFL.
And then you look at they've had two nearly dominant performances on defense over two of what are supposed to be the better offenses in the NFL, correct? Like,
yes, two teams that were in the playoffs a year ago, two teams that are expected to be great offensively this year, and they controlled them.
And then they've had clutch special teams play. And so those two situations, or those three situations, create the idea that at this moment in time, they are playing the best football of any team in the NFL. And I don't think that's bad to say right now. And that's why, you know, power rankings are such a silly thing, you know, but the reality is power rankings, you either do one or the other. You reflect them based on, you base them on either your expectations for the season. So, for instance, you would still have a team like Kansas City in the top five, right? Because you expect them to be playing for the AFC Championship game, probably against the Buffalo Bills. Or you base it on how the season is going at that time. And at this time, you would say that the best team in the NFC is the Arizona Cardinals, and probably the best team in the AFC is the Buffalo Bills. And so you look at that and you go, well, the Cardinals haven't had that one hiccup where the Bills started the season off with a loss against a really bad Pittsburgh Steelers team. And for that reason, right now, I don't think there's any reason not to, you know, say that they are playing the best football of any team in the NFL. And that's just when you take into account all 4 weeks of the season.
Absolutely. And so if we're talking about the best team in the NFL, yes, through 4 weeks, whether we want to qualify them as the best team, there isn't anyone better. I'll put it that way. So if they are not the best, they are one of the best. Because if you look at some of the numbers, so they have the number one offense in the NFL, both in points, both in terms of scoring and yards. They have a quarterback playing at an MVP level. They have a prolific passing attack, and they're running the ball. The rush offense is also very good. But then you look at the defense. While they've given up some points and they've given up yards, we want to look at some metrics. Entering week four, they had the number two defense on third down. And they were going up against the number two offense on third down in the Los Angeles Rams. And the Rams did pretty well on third down. I think they were 6 of 11. So if we look at some of these statistical metrics that you look at the defense, so while they aren't at the top of the league in the points and they're not at the top of the league in terms of yards, they are one of the best playmaking defenses in the league because they are number one in forced fumbles. They are third in takeaways. They're even after the Rams game, they're to number six in third down percentage. They're number six in broken up passes, so they're getting hands on balls. They are a top team in interceptions with four. They are eighth in points and offensive points allowed. Obviously, those numbers are going to be skewed a little bit because they gave up a defensive touchdown to Minnesota, and they gave up a special teams touchdown to Jacksonville. So they're eighth in points allowed, and then with their 10 sacks, they are 10th in the league overall. But here's the other part. Their second half defense is great. They've allowed 23 second half points this year in four games. 23. And so, and that goes, and 20 of those 23 second half points, seven of them came on a pick six and an extra point after that. So the defense has only allowed 16 second half points. So if you look
in,
at the
in
best
three
teams,
games, which is, or four games, which is,
that's,
I mean,
incredible.
You're talking about 4 points per game on defense.
Yes,
like that's,
and so
that's absurd.
You've got a top offense. You've got a top playmaking defense. You've got a 4-0 record. So if you're looking at who you might say who is the best team in the league, you're going to say the Cardinals. You might think the Rams. You might think the Bucks. You might think the Packers. You might think the Bills. Let's look at it. The Packers got jack stomped in week one. The Bills had a stinker against Pittsburgh. The Bucks lost to the Rams, who lost to the Cardinals. The Bucks also barely beat a New England team on Sunday night. So, and then you look at, okay, the Chargers, they have a loss. You look at the Raiders, they lost, and they got jack stomped as well. They were controlled for a good portion of that game on Monday night. So, is there a team better than the Cardinals? No. You could argue that there is a team up there, but if you mention some other team, the Cardinals are at least their match. So are they the best team in the NFL right now? They are at least one of the best teams in the NFL. This is not, for all of you Cardinals fans who can remember 2012, and I remember 2012 very well because it was the first year I covered the team as a media member, and so I got to be in the locker room, the field. This team is not like that 2012 4-0 team that finished 5-11. This team feels more like a 2015 team, which is crazy. And I'll be honest, it actually feels more like the 2016 team without the but with performing better. And that's kind of the feel that they get. This team is focused. This team is, they have their, this is, you know, if you've ever want to have a team that has their eyes on the prize, it is the Cardinals doing this right now because they're doing the job on offense. They're doing the job on defense. They're doing the job on special teams. They are humming at all three levels. And obviously we can't expect this team to go 17-0, 20-0 to win the Super Bowl, but things are going as well as we could have expected before the season began. I thought that this team, like the rest of the NFC West, has a Super Bowl ceiling, and we're seeing that potential through four games.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, is that potential and that ability to, you know, really put themselves in a position to be a team that competes deep into the playoffs. And so far, to your point, that's what they've done. I mean, they've put themselves in a position where they are, one, obviously, like you said, they got the huge, huge first win in the division, and a road win. Like, that's even bigger because now you expect them to take care of business at home. Like,
right, they, right.
So you
what we're saying,
lose.
Three wins in the division gets you into the playoffs, four wins the division. You pick up a road win over the Rams, you're looking at the possibility of a division win.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's the big thing. And you know, obviously we'll look ahead, you know, a little bit later in the show. But even more important is what's happening Thursday night. If somehow the Seahawks beat the Rams on Thursday night, the Cardinals can put a real stranglehold on the division early, where it's really just them and Seattle, because both, you know, the Rams and then the 49ers would both have two division losses in only five games played.
Right.
And so when you talk about how important this win was, that's where it starts to get very important, because you're talking about, a division win on the road against a team that's a Super Bowl favorite, and you go out there and you don't just win, but you control the game. And so that was a statement that this team, to your to what you said earlier, is not, you know, just for real, but they are contenders for real. And, you know, they're playing at a high level. And you and I talked about it quite a bit before the season started. The expectation was they would have a top five offense, and that was asking a lot, but they should have a top five offense and then potentially a top 10 defense. And if they did that, they were going to compete not just for the division, but be true competitors for, you know, in the NFC. I'm always one of those people that defaults back to Tom Brady. It, you know, it is until he doesn't win, I'm just going to expect it. But when you're, if you're competing in late January with the Buccaneers, then you're doing something right.
Absolutely. And the game, this win was big for a number of reasons. We mentioned the win that finally got the monkey off their back. So they finally got over the, not just the Sean McVay, but the Matthew Stafford hex, because they hadn't beaten McVay ever, and they hadn't beaten Stafford since 2015. So you get that streak out of the way. They are 1-0 in the division, which puts them in the driver's seat. They are now 2-0 in conference. So in terms of when you're just looking at the playoff race in general, even though it's only four games in, but conference wins are very important. And last week I said that looking at these next three games, they basically needed to come out of their 2-1 to be considered a real playoff contender. They took care of that right off the bat. They get, and if they beat the San Francisco 49ers this weekend, and that was basically, I said, they had to beat the 49ers at home because that's a home division game. And if they pick up a win against the Rams, that's perfect, because a loss to the Browns, if they, like, obviously they have the potential to beat that team on the road. They're still 3-0 in conference, and losses in the AFC aren't really going to hurt you in the playoff race. They're not really not. But we're looking at a team now, picking up that win against the Rams. It now puts them in a position to go 2-0 in the division, 3-0 in the conference to start the season 5-0. And right now, they have a four-game stretch where they're playing three of the next four at home. They've got San Francisco at home. They've got Cleveland on the road. They come back and play Houston, who looks abysmal with Davis Mills at quarterback. And then the Thursday night game against the Packers, which, you know, Cardinals fans, because Cardinals players, Cardinals coaches, you're only looking at San Francisco, that's fine. But we can eye that game in week eight as a potential to really stamp their status as the best team in the NFC, because then they will have knocked off Tennessee, who was an expected division winner, the Rams, an expected division winner, and the Packers, an expected division winner. They check off those three wins with maybe getting a loss to Cleveland. You're sitting there at 7-1, doing fantastic work. And that's basically what we're seeing is right now the Cardinals are in perfect position for what they need to do. But let's talk about the game specifically. Coming on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's come back and talk about the positives that there were in that game. What were the things that went well? That's coming on next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode of Cardinals Talk on the Web. There were a number of things to be happy about in that win over the Rams. We've already touched on a couple of them, but if there's one thing I want to bring up. Aaron Donald was a non-factor. I don't know if we've ever said that in any game against the Rams, but Aaron Donald was a non-factor. PFF grades, this or that. He had one of his lowest rush rush defense grades, I think it was, that he's ever had in his career. He was, whatever they did with a banged up Justin Pugh with Rodney Hudson, they had an offensive game plan that basically took Aaron Donald away. And the one time that we saw him affect a play, Kyler simply sidestepped him and made a play down the field. I think that's number one you look at. They basically neutralized the most important player on that defense.
Yeah, and it was interesting to watch, you know, everything unfold in that game because we talked about it. I mean, controlling the Rams' offense is a lot about controlling your offense and keeping your offense on the field. And I've got, you know, some interesting numbers that I wanted to talk about, you know, in this good, because this is going to just discuss how great the whole, both sides of the ball were, obviously, but especially how they were able to control the offense. So the first possession of the game, the Cardinals went -9 yards and punted. And that's coming off a 52-yard, you know, almost 4-minute drive by the Rams where you're like, okay. Now you held them to a field goal and you're like, okay. And then the Cardinals punt after getting -9 yards, right? Like you're all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh, here we go. And then Byron Murphy baits Matthew Stafford into an interception. Incredible play. But, you know, they start at the 13. It's going to be a tough one. And they go down and in six plays score a touchdown. They go 87 yards in six plays. The Rams' last time that they looked like they were going to be in this game was the next drive where they went down and scored a touchdown in about 5 minutes. And you thought, okay, here it comes. Here come those fireworks that we were expecting, right? You and I both expected a higher scoring game. I think we were right around our total points prediction, but we were expecting it to be
more even. Right.
And this is what the next eight drives for the Cardinals and eight drives for the Rams looked like. The Cardinals, after that touchdown, the Cardinals scored a touchdown. Then the Rams get the ball back. They fumble on the first play. The Cardinals score a touchdown. The Rams get the ball back and punt. The Cardinals punt for the final time of the game with 7 minutes and 26 seconds left in the second quarter. The Rams got that ball and went down and kicked a field goal. But then the Cardinals kicked another field goal. They got the ball to start the half. They kicked another field goal. And that's where it just turned. The Rams missed their field goal then. The Cardinals go down and score another touchdown. They hold the Rams on downs. And then they have probably the most impressive drive of the Cliff Kingsbury era. They go 94 yards in 12 minutes. Or sorry, in 8 minutes and 27 seconds. They only kick a field goal. But the Rams got the ball back with 3.5 minutes left in the game. The Cardinals got the ball with 12 minutes in the fourth quarter and didn't give it back till 3:30 left in the game. And there was no chance. I mean, at that point, there was literally no chance for the Rams. And you look at it, two punts in a game against this Rams defense, no turnovers. They didn't throw a pass for the entire fourth quarter. The Cardinals did not attempt a single pass in the fourth quarter. I mean, that is a baffling thing to think about. And it made the game easy on both sides of the ball because their offense was efficient and effective, and their defense made plays that we just haven't seen them make. The Stafford interception, forcing a fumble, holding on a promising looking drive to miss a field goal. Like those are all turnovers, and then they forced, you know, a fourth down and got off the field. And again, those are all turnovers. Those four turnovers in the game, that's huge. When you talk about the Cardinals only punted twice, the Rams turned it over to the Cardinals four different times. And that's just a complete game. And hard to fathom when you go into this game that you're going to see that. We didn't expect it from the Rams side either, let's be honest. We thought the Cardinals could compete, but we didn't expect them to be able to control the game like they did.
Right. And one thing that we kind of lamented the last couple of years is the inability of the Cardinals to manage the game late in halves. What we've seen through four games is we didn't need the first game. It didn't matter. But the Cardinals in 28 seconds were able to get in position for field goal. The Cardinals in week three were in less than a minute were able to get in position for field goal that they missed and it got returned for a touchdown. But this time in week four, they got the ball. They got the ball late in they weren't on the frantic side. And so they went down and they got the ball with 3 minutes and 22 seconds left. And they used up the entire clock but 4 seconds. They didn't end up finishing with the touchdown, but they kept the ball away from LA at the end of the half. They picked up points. Then they went down and picked up more points, and so they double scored, which is kind of what you want to do. That's the idea of deferring. So if you can manage it so you get points before the half and then after the half, so you don't basically you take a possession away from the other team. And then they were able to run down the clock in that 12 play drive, which was marked by which the big play was the 54 yarder by Chase Edmonds. But then after that, it was grinded out, move the chains, move the chains, move the chains. You talk about an air raid offense. This was an air raid offense with a power run game.
Well, and it's funny to think about that because I know at the end of the game, they really want to get Chase in the end zone. But it's ironic or just kind of funny to think about. It was the best thing that happened was he got caught from behind and he wasn't able to score a 97 or whatever it would have been yard touchdown. Now I know for his statistics, for everything else, and everybody would have been super happy if it happened, but it allowed them to run the ball. I think that was the third play of that drive.
Yeah. It was a third down run. They'd barely gotten any yards the previous two, and then it broke them out. And I think that play kind of broke the backs of the Rams defense.
Right. Cause the Cardinals took another 7 minutes off the clock after that play.
and they only went like 45 yards. That's the crazy thing in those.
Right. And yeah, I mean, the next plays went 7-4-14, no gain, 11-3. And then Kyler for the -3 on,
he gave himself just
not
up
taking,
here.
Yeah, not taking a hit. Like, that's insane because they and people are like, well, you can't slow down in the air raid and you know, this doesn't work. And no, like I know there's jokes about Cliff at Texas A&M. Trust me, nobody gets that as well as I do. But the reality is there is something to the Arizona Cardinals and the air raid offense that the best that Cliff has looked at Texas Tech was when they had a devastating running game with it. I think it was DeAndre Washington that had like what 1,200 or 1,400 yards to go with Patrick Mahomes throwing for 4,500 yards. Like, we want that for Kyler in a 17-game season, and Mahomes did it in a 12-game. Right. Like that is the dynamic of the air raid, is that you've got this spread out ability offensively to throw the ball, but then you're able to run the ball effectively to close down games. And it's just, let's be honest, we haven't seen it much, and now we've seen it in two games this year. Like, it's baffling.
Yeah, and, you know, Cooper Kupp wasn't a factor. Jalen Thompson, I think he's found his place in the league.
It's always been about health for him.
Right.
That guy is so good.
My goodness. It felt like he was becoming – he was being a Cam Chancellor out there is essentially what he was doing, put the boom on guys. You had the interception by Murphy. You had a questionable penalty takeaway, a Marco Wilson interception. That
was an interesting call. Not to lament, but this is the negative in the game. It was the officiating. Man, they allowed Jalen Ramsey to really assault DeAndre Hopkins out there. And then we had a couple really ticky-tacky calls against the Cardinals. But that call was interesting because they got Stafford's hand first. And I know it's a bang-bang play, and I don't think it's reviewable, right? Like, it's not like college where they can review it.
No.
But they call it targeting.
We've seen the forcible contact to the helmet. Simmons, it was not a strike to the helmet. He hit the arm, and he happened to nick the helmet.
Glance off the helmet.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And that was...
And honestly, let's be honest. It was probably a good thing that he hit his arm, because he probably would have broken a finger or something, because we've seen that a lot with, you know, where they go for that knockdown of the hand, the arm, and they miss, and then they bust their thumb or a finger against the quarterback helmet, and that's when you end up losing a guy. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, I think in the end, we're not going to talk about anything negative, because we don't really have anything negative to talk about. But I think that was the negative from the game, is you kind of felt like the calls were a little iffy, and, you know, we were robbed of Marco Wilson's first interception as an NFL player. But, you know, again, to quote basketball, ball don't lie. And there's a reason
they missed that interception.
Yeah, they missed that field goal, because the football gods were like, nope, not happening.
So, yeah, it was. And to watch Kyler Murray, he looked great as a passer, and he was more involved with the run as a runner. So he made plays with his legs. He was great throwing the ball. And we see with the personnel group, so with better protection, with a third year in the offense, and with better receivers on the team, we're seeing his ability. They're not just dinking and dunking. They are pushing that ball down the field. They're doing it without reservation. And the fact that you look at how he's three straight games with over 75% completion percentage, and it's not doing it with the short passing game. He's doing it down the field. That's what's super impressive about everything about this offense and everything about Kyler Murray. And I think, you know, finally seeing the right talent, I think everyone's starting to believe in that Cliff Kingsbury philosophy that it can work in the NFL. This isn't pretty boy football. This is just pretty football that has some physicality to it. It's not pretty boy football, but it is pretty football to watch. It is one fun team to watch right now, and they're flying around on defense. But coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We do have a couple of concerns, but we'll talk about how concerned we are about those things. That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I wrote about it a couple days ago, the two concerns, and I think they're the two areas where I think the Cardinals just aren't dominant right now. And if we notice over the statistics that they haven't been great at stopping the run, and there is an alarming lack of sacks in the last few games. How concerned are you with those particular areas?
You know, I think there are teams that are going to be able to, or are going to look to exploit it. As good of a coach as Sean McVay is, he sometimes gets really enamored with a shiny toy, right? And I felt like in a game where, obviously as not a neutral observer, but as not a Rams fan, you could look at honestly and say that it was not Matthew Stafford's day. Like, he was just, from the first interception, he was just missing some throws that you normally see him make. I think a lot of it has to do with the way the Cardinals were pressuring him. They were showing him a lot of different looks that you're not going to see a lot of teams do. There were some highlights. I can't remember who was highlighting it. And I apologize. I'm not trying to steal your information. I'll look while I'm talking about it. But they were highlighting how Vance Joseph was utilizing zone blitzes to really change the eyes on Stafford. And you saw plays where they were dropping Isaiah Simmons or Jordan Hicks into coverage as a safety and then bringing, you know, a defensive back as a rusher. And then they dropped their defensive tackles into that short zone.
Yes, I saw Michael Dogby in coverage. Like, whoa, what are they doing?
Yeah, and so what they were trying to do was they were trying to change Stafford's eyes by forcing him to see different things. And so, you know, it's a hugely different thing. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm comparing what I do in youth football to that. But one of the things that we do in youth football a lot is we will, you know, have a basic coverage. So a cover three where you've got your entire third of the field. And then we'll drop into a cover two where the safeties have half of the deep field and then the corners sit shallow and they stay home. And what ends up happening is they either make a play in the backfield because we've been bailing so much all day that the quarterback naturally throws that flat, or they see the corner sit and assume that they're going to have the deep ball. And then one of the safeties goes up and gets it. And when you do that, it creates, you know, things for the quarterback to then become worried about. And now all of a sudden they're like, okay, I can't trust what my eyes are seeing, because even though I'm not getting hit consistently, I'm confused on where they're dropping their coverages. And so that happened in this game a lot. And for whatever reason, McVay didn't just go back to running down their throat with Daryl Henderson. It was like Sony Michel came in for one run, fumbled the ball, and they were like, well, we can't run the football anymore. And meanwhile, you've got Stafford who's not seeing coverage as well. And kudos to Vance and the staff and the crew to run it so effectively, especially against this offense. But man, you would have thought that McVay would have tried to take advantage of it. And so I think it is something to be concerned about, because you've got obviously San Francisco coming up, who is going to run the ball, especially if Trey Lance is their quarterback, which we're expecting. We know Cleveland's going to run the football because they don't believe in Baker Mayfield quite like the Cardinals believe in Kyler Murray. And so for those reasons, they're going to have to get it fixed. That being said, you and I both do snap count things. And I thought the snap counts were really interesting, because I think it shows that they believed in both the game against the Titans and against the Rams that they could bait them into throwing the ball more. And obviously getting ahead helps that, but they baited them, I felt like, both teams earlier than they needed to in terms of giving up on the run. Did you not feel that way too?
Well, in a way, I kind of get what happened with, you know, falling behind and then with the Michelle fumble. I think it was coaches, and we've seen it from Kingsbury, we've seen it from Bruce Arians, when you get more than a score behind, they just don't trust the run anymore.
Yeah, they get into this odd panic mode, and it was like, oh, we can't run the football. And it's like, you're gaining 7 yards of carry.
It's in the first half.
Why can't you run the football? But I mean, and so to that point, I think both the 49ers and the Browns are going to test that. And I think that's important to the conversation we had earlier about them being, you know, potentially the best team in the NFL right now, is that when you have a weakness, as you said, right now, it's clearly the run game or defending the run. Sorry.
But it's only defending the run early because.
Well, yeah, because teams are bailing out of it. So you're not having to worry about it.
I think that's one of the important things of how this team is constructed. If their offense is unstoppable, which it appears to be so far this season, they can, and here's the truth. We can't honestly expect the Cardinals to be dominant in every single statistical
category.
It's impossible. But that is something to be concerned about, the rush defense, especially early on, because the 49ers are going to try. Luckily, they've seen the same running scheme the last 4 weeks, and they're going to see it again next week. And what's really interesting to me is the 4 defensive snaps that we saw from Zaven Collins. I think that is a testament, and I think he will see a similar amount of playing time against San Francisco, because the Rams and the 49ers try to trick the eyes of the defenders. And who's going to be most susceptible to that? That's going to be the young guy, Zaven Collins. I think and Buddha said it after the game. Buddha Baker said this after the game, that early on they were missing their run fits, they're missing their gaps because of their eyes. And then they got focused, they made some adjustments, and then it shut things down after that. And they're gonna have to do that early. But as long as it's not a whole game thing, you know, we don't want them to, like, obviously, if they could do with San Francisco and Cleveland what they did to Derrick Henry. And I think they have to have that same sort of mentality. If they can do that to the 49ers and the Browns, I think they will be setting themselves up again for some big wins.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And, you know, if you can get ahead early, then you bait teams into not running the football, which is, again, just a weird thing. The other thing is, and you know, the other concern is that they're not creating sacks. I think they only had none on Stafford, or just one?
They had not a single one.
Okay, so, and they only had one against Trevor Lawrence. Marcus Golden got it.
No, they ended up with two because Hicks hit the one at the very end.
Oh, that's right. I didn't count that one.
So they've got 10 sacks on the season total.
Yeah, so it was 6-2 and 2. And when you look at it from that perspective, they're fine in that way. However, I think, and you know me, I'm not a huge pressure guy. I think it leads to over belief that, oh, pressures are better than sacks. That being said, when you create pressure with 4, which they're doing quite often, and you have 7 guys in coverage, and then you're doing a lot with your coverages on the back end, it creates opportunities to make plays. Now, they've got to continue to make those plays. And I think that's the biggest thing that you look at, is if they're creating turnovers due to the pressure, it is good. If they're just getting pressures, but they're not seeing negative results on the offensive side of the ball, either obviously incompletions or even more turnovers, then the pressures don't matter. And so that's what matters right now, is that I think we said there were, you and I talking off there, there were what, 3 or 4 throws that Stafford made where you're just like, huh? And then you go back and you watch the replay and you're like, oh, he had a guy in his face. Like, so he was just getting rid of the ball. And those are the pressures that matter. Those are the ones that you look at and you go, okay, that is what a pressure defense can bring. Now, that being said, going up against Trey Lance is going to be important to get actual sacks. I do think that they'll force turnovers, but because the dynamic thing about Lance is he can obviously run the ball really well.
He can get away. And so they're going to really have to be careful about Chandler Jones in particular, because he sometimes gets away with it. He does end up leaving
his pass rushing.
He leaves the pass rushing. He doesn't contain all the time. And with a guy like, it hurt him a couple times with Stafford, but with a guy like Lance, if you don't finish, it's going to be bad.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it's just one of those things that they've got to find a way to, and they've got to show, and what I was going to say about snap counts. They didn't, I mean, Corey Peters played 15 snaps. Lucky Fotu played 15 snaps.
Rashard Lawrence played 19.
Yeah, like they weren't even really trying to stop the run. Like, again, they somehow baited a team by not playing their run stoppers to stop running the ball, which is just a baffling decision. And so maybe that changes. I've been quietly surprised by how much JJ's played. Have you not?
You know, it was one game for me that was surprised for how much, and that was just one game he played almost every snap. But the rest of it has been the 60-70% range, and which is what we were expecting, what I've actually been surprised about. We haven't seen him on the edge. He's only played interior so far this year.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at it, it may be the thing where they like having, you know,
well, it might be the trust they have in Marcus Golden. They like having Golden, Jones, and Watt on the field at the same time.
Well, and you and I have kind of talked about it a little bit, but they've also given Isaiah Simmons a lot of looks on the edge as well, too.
They have. Not my favorite thing.
Yeah, not a huge thing that you and I love. However, you know. But, yeah, I mean, looking at the snaps, yeah, Lawrence, you know, Devon Kennard's been – is a solid run defender. Lecky Fotu, Corey Peters, you know, Michael Dogby. I mean, Lecky Fotu, Corey Peters, and Michael Dogby combined for 44 snaps, which is, you know, five less than J.J. Watt played in the game. I'm not saying we expect them to play J.J. Watt-level snaps, but if you're truly trying to stop the run, like, you're going to get those guys in and keep them fresher, especially JJ, because you'll want him when they start to pass as much as they do. And I do think that's part of the reason JJ's numbers have been a little higher, because they said, what, 60% was what they were shooting for?
Kind of 65 is, I think, what they were shooting for.
And so, you know, now you look at it, and again, it's not a huge number, but I think he's in the on the season, he's... Yeah, 72, 90, 82, and then 72. So, like, they're, you know, he's probably right around 80% on the season. And I think that's a little bit more than what they wanted, but teams have either had to or have decided to throw the ball so much that it creates a different need for him and a different need of what the team needs from him. So that's why I'm not super shocked that their run defense has struggled, so to speak, because I think Watt's a good run defender, but he doesn't make as many explosive behind the line of scrimmage plays as he did when he was younger. So to me, that's, I think, the difference in what you're seeing is that Watt's on the field a lot. I don't want to say a lot more than we expected, but more than we expected, because he's rushing the passer so much, which is obviously not unexpected. That's what they brought him in for, was to be kind of that interior pressure guy. And he's done phenomenal so far in it.
Right. So I am concerned at some level that they're not getting the sacks, because honestly, that's what we want to see from guys like Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt and Marcus Golden. They are pressuring quarterbacks. Chandler Jones leads the NFL in quarterback hits with 14. So they are getting to the quarterback, but they're not finishing the play, which hasn't been an issue yet. However, you and I have talked for years on this show. You're not a big pressure guy. because good quarterbacks can still make plays under pressure, and a sack is a defined guarantee loss of down, loss of yards. That said, if you are getting in the quarterback's face, you do increase the likelihood of good things happening for the defense, which is what has been happening. They are pressuring. They do have a good pressure rate. They just don't have a good sack rate right now. And so I'm only mildly concerned, especially, but it is a kind of a bad combination if you're looking overall defensively. They don't stop the run well, and they don't get sacks. And you look at those two numbers, and you're like, they're a bad defense, but you look at everything they're doing, they're not a bad defense. So mildly concerned, and especially with a guy like Chandler Jones, you know that the sacks will come at some point as long as he's winning battles, and he has looked fine. He does, the Rams, he hasn't had a sack against the Rams in a long time. Andrew Whitworth really does a good job against him. He's might be the one tackle that can really kind of neutralize him in many ways.
Have we heard anything about, and I know I'm getting a little ahead, but have we heard anything about Trent Williams?
I haven't heard anything. I know that he left the game with an elbow injury. We'll have to wait and see with that first injury report, which by the time you're listening to the show, the first injury report will have come out. But, you know, I haven't seen anything that anyone has said about
his availability.
His availability yet.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is that's the other thing on there, is we know his sacks also typically are sustainable. And I think he drew two penalties on Whitworth. I know he drew one, a hands to the face penalty.
Trent Williams is going to be day to day with. It wasn't the elbow; it was the shoulder. I thought it was his elbow and elbow injury during the game.
Yeah, but they carted him off. That was what was weird. But he's a big guy; he needs help getting off the field. We'll be honest. But yeah, so you look at it, you know, and I know that people are going to be like, "Well, we want a sack," but like, if you're getting a hands to the face penalty, like that's just.
It's as good. You don't get the loss of a down.
Loss of down, but you get a 10 to 15 yard penalty. Come on, man. Like, we'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
So I think he drew two penalties. I could be wrong. It might have just been the one, but that's typically, I mean, that's what great pass rushers do. Think about it. Like, great pass rushers do what? They get one sack a game. Like, if you get 16 sacks and now 17 sacks in a season, you end up getting paid, you know, $20, $25 million a year. Like, that's how good you are. And so I think right now we look at it, you know, he's obviously had the massive first game and he's still got the five sacks on the season. And JJ has no sacks on the season, but they're creating pressures that are leading to turnovers. You know, obviously we know that the Byron Murphy pick six was all because JJ Watt
screwed up
the plate. And so, you know, all of those things create this reality. And that's what I would say, is that, yes, it is a concern, because to your point, you're going to go up against Aaron Rodgers, who you better get down on the ground. You know, you're going to go up against Russell Wilson twice. You better get him down on the ground, because we know that he'll just run around. I mean, we've dealt with it as fans for 10 years now, and now other teams are having to deal with it with Kyler. Like, it's actually nice to be on the other side of it for the first time as a fan and not going, just tackle him. And so, you know, to see it, you're in the right spot. They're in the right spot. They're close. I will agree with you though. The run defense is my biggest concern. And if you can find a team that's willing to stick it out, even if they get behind, you know, two scores, those, and I'm not talking two touchdowns, but two scores where you're down 10 or 13 and you just abandon the run, like, you're playing into what the Cardinals want you to do as a defense.
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to talk about the 49ers, whom the Cardinals will face this weekend. We'll preview it. We'll talk about matchups. We'll make our predictions. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The 49ers are coming to town. The Cardinals have a chance to go 2-0 in the division, 5-0 in the season overall. And they're not facing 100% healthy team. Here are some of the injuries they've got. Jimmy Garoppolo, calf contusion. Feels like he says he's got a chance to play. I doubt he plays. It's probably going to be rookie Trey Lance making his first NFL start. Trent Williams, day-to-day with a shoulder injury. Robbie Gould, they just placed on IR, signed Joey Sly. So they have a new kicker who's coming in. Elijah Mitchell, who was their stud early on in the season at running back, is banged up. George Kittle has some calf issues. Javon Kinlaw has the knee to manage. And, you know, they've got Samson Ebukam from the Rams. He's got some soreness as well on his hamstring. So they're facing a team that's lost two in a row and are, you know, have a little bit of health issues. How concerned, like, give me your level of worry and excitement to see the Cardinals face a rookie in Trey Lance.
I'm always concerned because I've been a Cardinals fan for too long that they're going to make Trey Lance look like Cam Newton or Tua Tagovailoa or Jalen Hurts last year. I mean, remember, those rookie quarterbacks looked like future Hall of Famers last year against the Cardinals. That being said, my concern more is the desperation that I think the 49ers, as well as Kyle Shanahan, are going to be under coming into this game. They're going to be desperate for a victory. They can't, 2-3 and basically four games behind the Cardinals, even though, you know, the Cardinals are only 5-0, the Cardinals will have the first win. That's a lot to overcome. And now they would be 0-2 in the division. That's a lot to ask. The health of this 49ers team is really going to be the key to this game because, you know, obviously we're expecting Trey Lance. We have a friend, you know, we're not reporting anything. We're just going to pass this along and it'll probably be out by the time this airs. But we do have a friend that's told us that they think that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to miss a couple weeks, if not more, with this injury. Again, we'll find out what happens. But, you know, if you guys
even
don't...
Jimmy said it himself a couple of weeks. And I think it's gamesmanship that Kyle said that Shanahan said he has a calf contusion and he has a chance.
Yeah, right.
I think that was just to put that out there for the possibility. It sure sounds like that they're planning on getting Trey out there on Wednesday for practice to run the offense.
Yeah, and so when you look at it, it's going to be a game that's about focus for the Cardinals. We talked about this with the Jaguars game, and I will say this. Kyle Shanahan's a much better coach than Urban Meyer. The 49ers are a much better team than the Jaguars. And so those things will matter in this game because if the Cardinals come out lethargic like they did against the Jaguars, there's going to be a huge difference because you're going to see the Jaguar or the 49ers one stick to the run. They've got a phenomenal defensive front when it comes to kind of getting after the quarterback. That's going to be something that's going to be important. And so I think from that perspective, the focus that we saw this week has to, and this kind of brings the show full circle, which we always love. The focus has to stay on the team getting to this game as the only game that matters, that nothing else matters. That win against the Rams is over. It's done with. I don't want to say it didn't happen, but that's what you think about, right? Like this is the first game. They're 0-0 and they're trying to leave Sunday 1-0. And that's how they have to look at it if they want to end up being this team that is perhaps the best in the NFL. if they come out slow, if they come out lethargic, if they come out under the gun and have to force Kyler to throw them back into it, it's not that I don't think he can. It's not that I don't think he will. I think that plays into what the 49ers want to do. If they continue to be balanced, if they continue to come out and play their game and force the 49ers into doing what they want, you're going to see a team that ends up, you know, moving to 5-0 on the season and continuing to look like a really, really complete team.
Right. And while the 49ers secondary is not very good right now, their pass rush still is. They still got Nick Bosa. They still got D4. They still got some talent on that team getting to the quarterback.
Eric Armstead's still there. Yeah. So they've got some guys. It's just their run defense has been surprisingly off this year. And like you said, their coverage is not good.
And so this is a game they should win. There's always some really good matchups to watch, obviously. So you want to see hopefully a healthy Byron Murphy going up against Deebo Samuel. Marco Wilson against Brandon Ayuk is going to be fun to watch. Two young, athletic as heck players. The pass rush, you got Trent Williams against Chandler Jones. Then on the other side, you're going to see J.J. Watt against Daniel Brunskill on the interior of the line. You've got Nick Bosa versus D.J. Humphries, and Humphries has been very good against Bosa in his career. I don't think Bosa has a sack yet in his career against the Cardinals. You get to watch George Kittle with Isaiah Simmons. It's not going to – we probably won't see as much Buda Baker, who's – so small compared to Kittle, but this is why Simmons was drafted, to be able to cover guys like Kittle. So we will get to see some of this happen, and I bet we don't see a whole lot of Zaven Collins because of that motion that they run. We will see a lot more of the big fronts because the 49ers use 21 personnel a lot more because they use Kyle Juszczyk and they use him as a move tight end in the backfield, and so they will go base. They'll force the Cardinals to use a bigger front than they have in the last few weeks. So we will see more of Rashard Lawrence and Corey Peters and Lucky Fotu. So it'll be interesting to watch in that sense. Lots of fun matchups, like I said. I think the key to this, if you're going against Trey Lance, you've got to One, you've got to contain, and two, you've got to give him a lot of different looks. It's like what they did against Trevor Lawrence. They gave him a lot of looks early, which ultimately led to him making mistakes late. And obviously, they got to keep doing what they got to do offensively. As simple as that. They keep putting points on the board. I think it's going to really be hard for the 49ers to do that. Trey Lance is an incredible talent, but someone who has as few starts as a starter at even the collegiate level, that's a guy that you should beat.
Well, and, you know, I don't know how many people heard the post-game interview from Kyle Shanahan, but he was not overly enthused with having to play Trey Lance at this point.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys. Like, people are really critical. Like, here's the thing I take on that. Who knows Trey Lance better than Kyle Shanahan? And so
right. If
he's really hesitant to have him be the starter, it's because Kyle Shanahan wants to win games and doesn't want to go through growing pains. He has a team that's supposed to compete. And when you put a rookie quarterback on that squad, you're going to have mistakes made because that's inevitable.
Right. And that's the whole issue. And you know, with Raheem Mostert sidelined, with George Kittle gimpy, with Brandon Ayuk really not finding his stride yet, this has been kind of the Deebo Samuel's offense.
He's been really good, really good. But the Cardinals were able to take out Cooper Kupp essentially of the game plan last week.
Yeah, George Kittle hasn't been himself this year. I do think some of that's been coaching. Kyle Shanahan's been a bit perplexing this year. I don't know how many Cardinals fans are following the 49ers, but, you know, Jess and I follow a lot of NFL teams, especially as they come into Arizona. And I will say we've had group texts where we're wondering aloud what exactly Kyle Shanahan is doing.
Kyle Shanahan, who is one of the darlings of the NFL, has a worse winning percentage as a coach than Cliff Kingsbury. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and so I just, like I said, this game's going to come down to the Cardinals and how they start. Are they focused? Are they ready? I don't think the 49ers, if the Cardinals play like they did against either of the middle two teams, you know, Minnesota or Jacksonville, they're going to lose this game. That being said, I'm not saying they have to be as dominant, but if they come out as focused as they were against the Titans and the Rams, there are very few teams in the NFL who can beat them.
And I anticipate they take care of business. I've got the Cardinals winning this game fairly handling 34-17. It might be a closer game than that before, like, ultimately what the final score says. But I just feel that the Cardinals are doing much better, that they're focused and that they're kind of playing, they're doing the things that they're supposed to do. And I think that they would be amiss to lose to a Trey Lance-led team in his first NFL start. And the 49ers are always tough.
Especially at home.
Right. They're playing at home. They've got a banged-up San Francisco team who's now lost two in a row. They're going to get they're going to get their best shot. But this is a game I think the Cardinals, they look like a team that knows how to win, and I think they're going to do it. I've got this game, Cardinals 34-17.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals come out and win this game. I think they continue to shine on offense. I'm going to go 37 to 27. I think the 49ers get a late score all out to what we saw from the Rams. But they continue to, you know, be the best offense in the NFL, and their defense is doing enough consistently.
Sounds good. With that, we will end this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Next week, we hope to be talking about a 5-0 team heading on the road to Cleveland. They've got a tough game next week, but until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Team Red! Red!